right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, we are talking about Joe Carnahan's Cop Shop. And let me tell you, the odds are, if you're listening to this, you haven't seen this movie yet because nobody is watching this movie, but everybody should be watching it because it is so much fun. It's still out in theaters right now. I'm sure it'll be on VOD like any day now, but you should go watch this movie. We got two Joe Carnahan movies in the last year between this and Boss Level, and he's kind of on a roll right now. You know, Joe Carnahan doesn't always get the respect that he deserves, I think, but these last two movies have proved that when it comes to action movies that are not John Wick type action movies or Marvel type action movies, he's the guy right now. And this is really an original, fun piece of movie. Joining me to talk about it is Joe Black, who's been here on the show a bunch in the past, and always happy to have Joe back on. He had a lot to say about Cop Shop, and we have a great conversation coming up. So before we do get to that conversation, I want to remind you all, as always, to make sure you are subscribed to Piecing It Together wherever you listen to podcasts. We're, of course, on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, on Pocket Cast, where I listen to podcasts. Good Pods, you know, all the podcast apps, we're there. Make sure you're subscribed. You can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or Good Pods or Podchaser. If you like what I do here on Piecing It Together, make sure to leave a review. It would be really awesome if you did that. And you can, of course, share the show with your friends. That's just the best when people do that. Follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. We have been getting a little more active on Instagram as well. I'm finally doing that. And I got to tell you, I have no way of tracking when we have a good day or week or month of downloads on the podcast, but I feel like ever since I started doing more Instagram, those numbers are going up, and I don't understand. You can't even click it from Instagram over to the episode. Like, there's no link, you know, links in bio, but there's no actual clickable link. So how is that getting us new listeners? You know, whatever. Whatever it is that is getting you to this show, I'm happy to have you here. But we also have the Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces group over on Facebook, where we continue the conversation about all the movies we talk about here on the show. So make sure you join that group. Lots of fun talk over there. I'm sure we've talked about Carnahan a bunch of times over the last few years. Last but not least, don't forget about our Produced by David Rosen Patreon, where I post bonus and advanced content from Piecing It Together, Awesome Movie Year, and from my music career, which, speaking of which, a bunch of bonus content going up very soon, like in the next week or two, from my music, because I'm about to release a new album. I'll talk about that a little more at the end of the episode, but yes, let's get to our conversation about Cop Shop. All right, Joe Black is back with us today to talk about Cop Shop, which I know he's been wanting to talk about for a long time. Joe, how you doing?
I'm doing very well. Long time coming, like you said, so that's cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And you have been telling me to look out for this one, to keep an eye out, and you were not wrong, my friend. I had a lot of fun with this movie.
I'm very happy to hear that. I have a tendency. I live in L.A., so I get to see a lot of these movies in like pre-screening.
Yeah.
And whenever Joe Carnahan's name pops up on one of those, I'm already in line before I've even like signed up, you know. but sometimes like I get overzealous about these movies. Like, I remember I saw Mad Max Fury Road like a year before it came out. Like, so I saw it came out in May of 2015. I saw it in July of 2014.
Yeah.
And like, I try to keep like my excitement low, you right. know, like Mad Max. I wouldn't even tell people that I loved it. People would be like, is it, you know, how was it? I'd be like, it's good. You know, when inside I'm just like, just you fucking wait.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. I think when I saw Cop Shop, for some reason, just like Alexis Lauder's performance, especially, I was just so high on this movie. And I knew that I knew when I saw it that like nobody was going to see it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that, like I already knew watching it. I'm like, the studio is not going to promote this movie and it's not going to do anything, you know? So like I allowed myself to be more excited, telling people like you, basically everybody I came into contact with, go see Cop Shop, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's surprising that this is actually like theatrical. Like, this is the kind of movie people say doesn't come out anymore, but they do come out here and there, and this is what people should be supporting when they do.
I agree. I agree. And you know, he also made this movie during lockdown.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like, honestly, it doesn't have that. A lot of these movies, like, I don't know if you saw The Card Counter.
I haven't seen it yet. No.
Yeah. I thought that was pretty fucking awful, but like, it so obviously was made during lockdown. They're in like casinos for 2/3 of the movie with nobody in them but them.
Right.
You know what I mean? They're like sitting at a casino bar and there's like one person in the background. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah.
They're by a pool that nobody's in, you know, not even them. Like, it's, but this movie feels like this, you could tell that this was not written to be a lockdown movie. It was written beforehand, you know, and he, I don't know, man, it just, he's a real director.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. He makes movies. That's the thing. Right. He makes movies. And that's a thing that some of my favorite movies of this year so far, that's exactly how I would describe them. Movies, you know? Mm-hmm.
I agree. Actually, like, you, I know on the page you posted earlier today about, like, you know, what movies surprised you this year. And when I looked at my list, they were all exactly what you're talking about. You know what I mean? That like Snake Eyes is one of my favorite movies of the year. You know what I mean? Like, that's a movie through and through, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, but Carnahan, you know, what's really interesting is that there's some of these filmmakers who are really showing their true colors when they have these limitations. Like, Carnahan is one of them. I know some, Rob Zombie is another one that I really like, you know what I mean? But also like M. Night Shyamalan. Like, he was somebody who like got in that big budget world, you know what I mean? And like, I still liked them fine, but you know, people didn't seem to respond. But then suddenly he recoils back to the five million, 10 million range, like something like a Split, which is just a masterpiece, you know?
Right, right.
And I think that's the sign of, like, you know, a true filmmaker, somebody who knows how to adapt and I don't know, like, roll with the punches is kind of a, you know what I mean? And
yeah,
Carnahan's
yeah.
been doing that for 20 years.
Well, one other thing about this, and then we'll start getting into some pieces, but it's actually a good setup for talking about puzzle pieces, is we both message each other that this one's kind of a little tough to find pieces for.
Right.
And I think part of that is because this is a Carnahan movie. Like, that's what it is through and through. It's a Joe Carnahan movie.
Yeah, and like, he's just somebody who, like, for the people who make movies, who especially the people who self-finance movies, you know, like people like me, he's such an inspiration because, you know, I'm pretty sure, you know, he got noticed with his movie Blood, Guts, Bullets, and Octane.
Uh-huh.
Which
I've never seen, but...
Oh, it's great. It's really, really good. And he's actually the second lead in the movie, and he's terrific. Like, he's really good in the movie. I gotta
watch that.
Yeah, it's so good. It's definitely worth your time. But he made it for $7,000. It gets released. It gets shown in Sundance as one of their midnight movies. And then he gets to, like, you know, the Hollywood people come a knocking, right? And he makes Narc, which was amazing. Tom Cruise sees Narc, helps Paramount push it to be a big movie, and then wants Carnahan to make Mission Impossible. Right? Like, that's like the dream for all these indie filmmakers that, you know, from the Colin Trevorrow's or the Ryan Coogler, like all these people, that's what they do these days. But then Carnahan, he starts working with Tom Cruise on Mission Possible, and he goes, you know what, man, like, I don't think we're seeing eye to eye. And he drops out. He just drops out.
I don't need this.
Yeah, he doesn't get fired. He's just like, nah, I'm good. Like, what you're laying down, I'm not driving with. And then he makes Smokin' Aces, which is still his best film, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. You know, he gets that ball rolling, and suddenly he gets to headline the A-Team and yada, yada, yada. Then here comes Will Smith wanting to make Bad Boys 3 with him. And he's like, of course, you know. And I, you know me, I'm team, you know, no Bay, no way when it comes to Michael Bay properties. Sure. Like, so if he's not involved, no thanks. But Carnahan directing, I was like, ooh, yes, that's fine. That's a fine substitute. Then he and Will Smith, suddenly we're not seeing eye to eye. And he's like, you know what, Will? I think you want to make this movie more than I do. And he backs away again.
Like, screw it.
Like, yeah. And then what does he do? He goes and he makes Boss Level and then this movie because these are the movies he wants to make.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And he was also an early adopter of Jason Blum's thing. Like when Jason Blum first popped up making the $5 million movies, Carnahan was like, hey, man, sign me up. Fucking A.
Yeah.
You know, and he makes Stretch, which is another just great movie, you know? And that's why I think he's more of an inspiration than any of these like other like modern indie directors, because he's the guy who will only make the stuff he wants to make the way he wants to do it. And in my opinion, that's what a director should be.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah.
Yeah. And if he doesn't want it, he backs away.
That is a way to be, especially with the way movies are nowadays and with the way budgets are and what people want out of movies. And so, yeah, I mean, to have that kind of a voice and to stick to it is really admirable. But let's start getting into some puzzle pieces here. And what do you have for your first one?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. My first piece, I want to get like the more obvious ones out of the way. You know what I mean? Because I found a few. My first one is, I'll just go with Jackie Brown right out of the gate, because you have, you know, the strong female black lead, you know, is like kind of the obvious nod.
Sure.
You know what I mean? But when you watch the movie, it's actually, the cut I saw was a little bit different from the final released cut. Mm-hmm. Like it was a little longer. And not like that there were more scenes. There was a little bit more with Huber, the fat, you know, like evil cop guy.
Yeah.
But the rhythm of the editing was much more set to like a funk, laid back soul kind of approach. And the score, I think, speaks to that too. A lot like Jackie Brown, you know what I mean? And then also the ending, you know, gosh, it's so tough to not want to spoil this movie because I know that most people who are listening haven't seen it, but you know, it's your fault. Not you. I mean that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But the very end of the movie when they're driving after one another, you know, and playing the song on the radio and singing the song, like you can't help but think of Pam Grier at the end of Jackie Brown.
Totally. That is that end of Jackie Brown. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And no, that's a great piece to kick it off with. And, you know, I might as well just jump right on top of that with Reservoir Dogs because, you know, getting all the Tarantino out there right now. That was the first thing that came to mind for me. All these violent criminals with plenty of snappy dialogue trapped in a single location, basically. And in this case, it's within a jail cell instead of this warehouse situation like in Reservoir Dogs. But nobody trusts each other. They're all, you know, you have no idea at any given moment who is going to be, the one that's trustworthy or not. It's just, it's everything is kept completely close to the vest right up until the very end. And it's just a fun, tension-filled thriller, basically.
Yeah, it actually kind of unfolds a little bit like Reservoir Dogs 2 in that, like, the trailers tried to sell it as the trailer tried to sell it like as a, I go to the movies 3 times a week. I saw that trailer one time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But anyways, like the trailer tries to sell it as like a slam bang action movie, you know, and it's really not that movie.
No.
And like Reservoir Dogs, the violence is like the last third of the movie. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's all kind of building and ramping to that.
You know it's coming, but it's not dished out through the whole time.
Exactly. You know, and honestly, when you go back and watch like even Smoke and Aces, it's actually the exact same way. Mm. Like Smoke and Aces is a lot of buildup. You know what I mean? But, you know, we've talked about before with Tarantino movies. You know, I've done a couple Tarantino-themed episodes with you. Three, I think. I talk about how Reservoir Dogs is just not my favorite, you know what I mean? And it's because, you know, as I said then, it's him speaking it out loud for the first time, and that's going to be kind of, you know, clunky while he's trying to find his voice, if you will.
Mm.
But he and Carnahan, you know, he obviously Carnahan happened because of him, you know, in like the post Pulp Fiction derivative world of indie filmmaking, you know, Carnahan was one of them for sure, but he was one that broke through. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So without Reservoir Dogs, we don't have Carnahan, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, so. No, I think that totally makes sense.
Yeah, Jackie Brown's better.
Yeah, I think maybe, you know, it's funny you say that because, like, on my last Tarantino rewatch, I think I'm starting to get there myself. I mean, Jackie Brown, it just, every viewing of that movie, it just gets better and better and better.
I agree. You know, I stand by that, like, Inglourious Basterds is still my favorite, although Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is, you know, I mean, we're a year away from figuring out whether or not that's my favorite movie of all time. But Jackie Brown is the only Tarantino movie that, like you said, actually gets better every time I see it.
Right.
And I see it pretty often. It was one of the major influences on the movie I just made on a Natasha Hall too. So
awesome. Well, what do you got for your next piece?
My next piece is the other obvious one, but with a slight twist. You know, my next piece is Assault on Precinct 13.
Sure.
But not the Carpenter one.
Okay.
Because the Carpenter one is, you know, I mean, it's like just like these bad guys trying to get in to kill the cops or whatever. What I actually is the remake is where I'm coming from.
Okay.
Because what I liked about the remake, which the remake is better than it had any right to be. I like that it's about cops trying to get in to kill the prisoner.
Okay.
Right. So like that's why the cop can't call for that's why Ethan Hawke can't call for help in Assault on Precinct 13. It's because it's a bunch of crooked cops that all are tied directly to Lawrence Fishburne's criminal character that want him dead, because you know what I mean? Which is a very similar premise to this, you know?
Sure.
You know, and that is one thing that this new theatrical release cut of the movie kind of like, I wouldn't say like messed up, because I don't think it messed anything up in particular, but you had a clearer sense of like the organization coming at Alexis Lauder's character. Like that, the other black detective, the one who like, you know, double crosses her in the end. Like, it's a little clearer who she is.
I was going to say that is my least favorite part of the movie, actually, because I was like, wait a minute, who? I didn't even realize that was a major character when that happened, you know?
There was one scene with her toward the beginning that was in the cut I saw that was cut out, where it really solidifies her in your mind, not just as a figure on TV, but an actual character. And then when she calls her in the middle of the movie and it's revealed that she's hiding the bodies in the lake or whatever, you're like, oh shit. You know what I mean? But as it stands now, like when my wife went to go see it with me, when that woman popped up at the end and shot her, she's like, who's that?
That's how I was.
Yeah. They also cut a little bit of Teddy's backstory from what I saw too, just a little bit. And like when he calls his girlfriend or his ex-wife at the beginning and doesn't get through to her, you know?
Yeah.
In the version I saw originally, they show inside her apartment and you see blood everywhere on like a sink and a sink running. And I wrote on my little like note card thing to them, like that they asked where I wrote, cut that out. We don't need to know that. Like, we don't need to know what Teddy doesn't know.
Right.
Because I'm a subjective kind of filmmaker and watcher. But honestly, I was wrong. When I saw this cut, I was like, no, you need the shot of the sink.
Sure.
That way we're on Teddy's side.
Yeah, for sure.
What was my piece? Assault on Precinct 13.
Assault on Precinct 13. Good piece. I actually did have the Carpenter one on my list just because, I mean, it is an obvious thing, but I've never seen the remake, so I'm going to have to watch that one of these days. But instead of bringing his version up, well, I guess I just did bring it up, but you know, instead of using that as my piece, I'll use that as a jumping off point to a different piece, which is kind of late 70s, early 80s slasher movies. I felt a lot of the vibe in the police station through, I guess not the first act, so I guess it would be the second act of the film, once we're like stuck in the police station and people are just kind of being picked off, and there's like a lot of fun cues within the score, a lot of like mystery stuff and things like that. It felt like before shit pops off in a horror movie, you know, in a slasher horror movie. And so I thought of those Carpenter movies like Halloween and stuff like that. I thought of even like Friday the 13th and things like that, just slasher movies in general, the way that that kind of sequence plays out once people start dying.
I agree. And I mean, Anthony, you know, the hitman, Tony, you know, he's, I mean, he's a total like Freddy Krueger type character. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Somebody who's just relishing in the fun of chaos.
He has so much fun in this movie. That actor is so great.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that was another thing when I saw it, you know, I felt when he started singing, you know, I was like, oh, that's a little too much. You kind of jumped the shark with the character a little. But then at the end, when they play that song, I was like, oh, that motherfucker, he was setting me up for the perfect ending. Joe Carnahan, how dare I doubt you, my friend. That is good, though. I like that. I'm not really an aficionado of horror, especially from that era. And I think that, you know, you guys talked about it a little bit on your Malignant episode, which, I'm starting to get the itch. You know, we're getting into the Halloween season and, you know, like, I might have to, instead of this year just going back to my classics, I might have to, like, branch out a little bit.
Sure, sure. Well, you know what? And thank you for bringing up Malignant, by the way, because 2021, the year of mayhem inside of police stations, it seems like.
Oh, for sure.
These two.
Yeah. For sure. And like you guys last week, I also will not be using Terminator as a puzzle piece. the next one I have is Rio Bravo.
Okay.
The John Wayne film, which is, you know, Carpenter, among many other people, is directly influenced by that movie. Assault on Precinct 13 is directly influenced by Rio Bravo. Have you ever seen it?
I haven't, no.
Yeah, I hate John Wayne movies. I really do. Sorry, Dad, but I do. but I really loved Rio Bravo. And in it, he plays like a sheriff who arrests this kid at the beginning who's like drunk in a bar. And that kid is like the son of like the worst, like, you know, gangster, like in the Old West. Mm. And so he's holding him there waiting for like a U.S. Marshal to come get him and take him from this little small town, knowing that that kid's brother and his gang are on their way to come like break him out.
Sure.
So John Wayne has to get like his ex-deputy, who's now the town drunk, played by Dean Martin, and this young kid played by Ricky Nelson, who... They have to hold down the jail.
Right.
And another reason why it comes to mind too is because in the middle of it, there's just a really random musical number.
Nice.
Where like, and like a full blown, like just them, like, you know, singing like old cowboy songs while they're like alone in this, you know,
you could try things like that back then, I guess.
Exactly. And like, I remember seeing it for the first time, and when that happened, I was like, what the fuck? Mm-hmm. But then by the end of the song, I was like, that was lovely.
Yeah.
Like, what a lovely song. And I, you know, I think that about like a Cop Shop as well, with like the singing in the middle, like, you know, there's a sing-songy kind of feeling to this movie for sure.
Sure. Yeah. And you really just never have any idea where this is going to go as far as, you know, what's going to happen, who's going to get out, who's going to be, like I said earlier, you really don't know who's going to truly be the worst of the bad guys. You know, there's just really, it's so unpredictable, right, which is what makes it so much fun.
That's performances too, though. And Carnahan, like Tarantino again, is able to, I feel like actors like Gerard Butler and Frank Grillo, especially, they're actors who have just been coasting their whole careers on their charisma.
Right.
In my
right.
opinion, like, I don't think they're either of them are particularly good actors.
Right.
But they're both brilliant in this. And it's because I think Carnahan, like Tarantino, knows how to utilize like that star quality in somebody, but make them step just out of character enough where they have to like figure it out.
Yeah.
And that elicits like a great performance. Like, I think Frank Grillo is like aces in this. Like, he's so good. You know what I mean? So much so that Teddy's twist is, you know, a betrayal.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So.
Yeah. And I mean, and along with Alexis Lauder's great performance, I think acting against these two kinds of actors really, really accents what she's doing.
You know? I agree.
Yeah. Against these two big, like, movie star type actors, you know?
When I saw it, I'm watching the movie thinking, who the fuck is this, like, sonic boom? You know what I mean? And then the lights come up at the end of the movie, and the woman sitting just a couple seats over from me stands up and goes, "Thanks for coming out and enjoying our hard work." And it was her. And I was like, what the fuck? I was like three feet away from her the whole, you know, like, and she like, she actually stood outside of the theater and took pictures with everybody. Like, they made a line and like people just came up and took pictures with her for like an hour, as far as
That's
I
awesome.
Could tell. I mean, I didn't get in line. I was too nervous. She's so good. We're Facebook friends now, though.
No, there you go.
Not all just right. her fan page either.
Well, I'll go on to my next piece here. A movie I didn't really like that much, but I love the idea of. That's 2016's Free Fire from Ben Wheatley. A similar movie to Reservoir Dogs in a way. I think if this podcast had been around, Reservoir Dogs would have been a piece on that one. But I especially wanted to include it as a separate piece because you get that shot in the beginning here in Cop Shop of all those guns that are in the police station. And you just know they are all going to get used, every last one of them, and just how great of a foreshadowing that is. And then also, I think it was called Gun Creek Police Station. So, I mean, just all of it, you just know that there's just pure violence coming, but we just we wait until it pops off, you know?
Yeah. Dude, Free Fire is another movie that I saw a pre-screening of like a year before it came out. I had no idea what it was or what it was about. I just saw Armie Hammer was in it and I was like, I'm in. You know, this is before. But anyways, I don't kink shame. No. But I was, no pun intended, blown away by Free Fire. Like, I had never seen a movie like that. I thought it was brilliant. And I actually got asked to stay afterward for like the little 10 person, like, you know, what's it called? Focus group. Uh-huh. And they were like, if you could come up with one tagline for this movie, what would it be? And I raised my hand and I was like, we got you covered. Because like they're actually in an umbrella factory in that movie. And nice. The guy laughs. He's like, ha, 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 you want a job? And I'm like, that's not funny. Yeah, I do. But as I left, they actually made me sign a little NDA just in case they used it. And I was like, I thought you were offering me a job, you fucking liars. Anyways, but that was another one that for like a year, I was like telling people like Cop Shop. I was like, guys, when a movie called Free Fire comes out, you got to check this movie out. It's the best. It's the best thing I've seen all year. Now, that movie, when it came out, I wear a watch with me when I go to these things because I'm always curious to know the runtime. Mm-hmm. Free Fire, I can't remember the exact numbers, but I remember that when it came out, I saw the runtime was almost 20 minutes shorter than what I had seen when it finally came out. So I have actually still never seen the theatrically released version because it wasn't met with a lot of like, you know, excitement or praise, you know what I mean? Yeah. And I was certain that the version I saw was the next Reservoir Dogs, if you will.
Yeah.
So I've never seen it out of fear that they like ruined what I thought was a brilliant film.
Yeah, I'm curious because I remember just loving the concept and just thinking execution wise it just didn't quite work out, but still an interesting movie.
Did you like Armie Hammer in it?
Armie Hammer's good. Armie Hammer's good in most things.
I agree. I was really relieved to see somebody finally let him have fun with a character. Because even in The Lone Ranger, which is one of my favorites of the last decade, he was like the straight man. You know what I mean? And I liked that in this, he was like the wisecracking, almost like a Harrison Ford, early Harrison Ford character.
Sure, sure. Yeah. Absolutely. All right, well, what do you got for your next piece?
Okay, so I have two more pieces, and they're both a little bit of a stretch, sort of. One of them is the Adam Sandler, Damon Wayans hit film Bulletproof.
Okay.
What I liked about that was the, have you seen that movie?
It's since probably opening weekend, but
yeah, it's one of those for sure. Like I hadn't seen it in 20 years or whatever until like a couple of months ago, it popped in my head and I was like, yeah, that it's time to revisit Bulletproof. But that's another movie about a cop having to trust a criminal and a criminal who like double crosses him as far as he can tell, but maybe he was wrong. And then like the cops themselves are like double crossing him. And like, you know what I mean? It's just another one of those like, you know, criminal, almost like 16 Blocks, the most deaf movie. You know, sure. Oh, wow. What? I hope you did. 16 Blocks. That's another
not,
puzzle
not
piece.
On my list, but yeah, put it on well, there. Well,
that's probably because you saw it. But that's another one, you know, Bruce Willis having to get that, you know, most deaf to the courthouse, you know what I mean? And all the cops trying to kill him because he has all the dirt.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. No, I'm glad you brought those up though, because like, yeah, I was trying to think of a good one for that same concept of like the cop that has to trust the criminal. Otherwise they're just not going to, you know, get through the situation.
Right. Yeah. So a double piece, Bulletproof and 16 Blocks.
There you go. Those work just fine.
All I'm saying is Adam Sandler, you know, he's a little more progressive than people give him credit for. 16 Blocks, you know, of course the black guy is the criminal, but in Bulletproof, no, the black guy is the cop. Adam Sandler also was like, his production company was like hiring a lot of women to direct his films and stuff. I'm just throwing that out there. He's, you know,
Adam Sandler, he's a treasure.
He's more than a treasure. He's a fucking diamond in the rough.
Sure is. Well, I'll go on to another piece here. I was just going to bring up Shane Black in general, you know, and that's kind of a Carnahan thing anyway, but you know, still we could use it for this, maybe go with Lethal Weapon, you know, but just cops, snappy dialogue, none of the smaller characters being wasted. Like everybody's got like little moments and little funny bits and all that. And everybody like factors into the story. So, you know, a lot of that kind of Shane Black energy and also a hothead sergeant. You know, so he's got a lot of that stuff going on too.
Well, Shane Black's greatest strength is that he leans into the cliches. You know, yes, what I mean? Like, exactly. Like that's his greatest strength, is that he leans into those like types and but he like, you know, hits him with a sledgehammer. You know what I mean? Almost yes. Like he's almost like the pulp version of Oliver Stone or something like that. You know, sure. What I mean? As a writer. And Carnahan is very similar. I actually I should email Shane, see what he thinks of this movie. He's kind of just living in his house right now, not really talking to the outside world from what I understand, but
he must have I could just imagine all of these just unfinished scripts that he probably just one after another starts and stops.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, my favorite screenplay maybe of all time is actually Last Action Hero and that final draft, the draft he did. Yeah, I love Shane, both as a person and as a filmmaker. I don't think he quite has what Carnahan has, especially as a director. I've never been in love with any of the movies he's directed. You know, like I know that there's a big falling out there for Kiss Kiss Bang Bang and The Nice Guys, but I thought that The Nice Guys especially was just like really heartbreaking. Like, can you imagine?
I love The Nice Guys. But I love it.
But can you imagine if Joe Carnahan had directed The Nice Guys? You know what I mean? Like somebody who has a better sense of like rhythm for action and comedy, like as a director, like, I don't know. I like his scripts are so good that I feel like they deserve the best treatment. You know what I mean? And
sure.
I don't know if he's that guy.
Well, you know? I think The Nice Guys is perfect as is, but I like Carnahan though. So I'm sure he would have done a great job as well.
For sure. I mean, my favorite Shane Black movie is still Iron Man 3, but that's only because it has Rebecca Hall in it. So
there you go. That will help. That Damn, will.
You have no idea. I sat through all of The Night House, David.
Well, what do you got for your last piece?
My last piece is it's an early Gene Hackman film. It's an early Michael Ritchie film, the guy who did Golden Child and Bad News Bears. And it's an early film called Prime Cut.
Okay.
And Prime Cut is a movie about Gene Hackman plays a gangster from Chicago who's moved to Kansas. And he's like kind of like their leg in Kansas, but he hasn't been like paying his dues to them. And so the Chicago mafia sends somebody to go get, you know, the money he owes them, but Gene Hackman kills him and sends him back to them as hot dogs. Like the whole opening credit sequence is them in like a hot dog factory turning this guy into hot dogs. Nice. So the Chicago Mafia, they send their strongest enforcer, who is Lee Marvin, out to go get him. And he and Gene Hackman, it gets revealed, have like a past where like Gene Hackman like took Lee Marvin's wife. So there's a lot of like cat and mouse, tongue in cheek, I'm gonna get you when the time is right kind of quality to it. It is. Have you ever seen this movie?
I have not. No, we just watched For Awesome Movie or Point Blank just a few months back. And yeah, so Lee Marvin, just in general, what a fun character.
This movie is so much better than Point Blank. This movie, it's not even 90 minutes. It's like really short. It was also Sissy Spacek's first movie. She plays the first time we see Gene Hackman himself in this movie, just to give you an idea, is when Lee Marvin and his two bodyguards and his chauffeur go to this giant barn out in Kansas. And when they go inside the barn, it's just a bunch of pig pens with naked, drugged out women in them that he's selling on the black market. And Gene Hackman's sitting at the far end of the bar at this giant table eating gizzards. You know what I mean? Like, and
talk about movies. This is one of those.
Yeah. Sissy Spacek is one of them. And Lee Marvin, just to kind of throw his weight around, like to show Gene Hackman that his number is up, just takes her, picks her up. He's like, I'm taking her with me. And and Gene Hackman's brother and main henchman gets so mad at him, he throws a pitchfork at Lee Marvin's limousine and it like wedges in the door and they just drive off with this pitchfork in there. The movie is so good.
I'm gonna have to watch it. It's going on the list.
Yeah, dude, and it's so short. Like, by the time it's over, you're just like, because you can watch it for another hour. It's so awesome. And really, so like the reason I think of it as the puzzle piece, like I said, is like the two like sides of a criminal underworld, like that cat and mouse. I'm gonna get you. No, I'm gonna get you. Kind of quality. Where, but really, I mean, like 50% of the reason why I bring it up is just so I could tell people to watch Prime Cut.
Yeah, absolutely. That sounds like a great movie. It's going on my watch list for sure. Yeah. I'll go with my final piece, and that is Martin McDonagh's Seven Psychopaths, mainly because we get that whole scene where they're going on about who is actually a psychopath in this. So it could be three psychopaths, this movie.
That's true. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, like, that's a very Shane Black-esque movie, too.
It very much is. Yeah.
You know, I was really excited for that movie. Even though, what was the one he did right before that that everybody loved? Oh, In Bruges?
In Bruges, yeah.
I didn't love it. Like, I remember seeing it because I heard such good things. And I remember thinking, I was like, it kind of lost me in the middle.
Yeah.
But Seven Psychopaths, when I see Tom Waits in anything, I'm there. Like, that's sure. a given. And I was watching it, and I was like, this is okay. And then I told somebody, I only saw it because Tom Waits is in it. And they're like, oh, did you know that originally it was supposed to be Mickey Rourke? But, like, he blah, 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 so they got Tom Waits instead? And I was like, wait. So Tom Waits wasn't his first choice?
Oh, no.
Well, I mean, that shows. Like,
they're but like, that's Tom, still my favorite. Come do this,
please? Oh yeah, that's still my favorite of his movies. I did not like Three Billboards at all. His brother, what's his brother's name? Because his brother's a filmmaker too, and I've liked his movies a lot more. And that's such a shame that I can't remember his name, even though I like his movies a lot more. He did that movie. What was it called? War on Everyone with Alexander Skarsgård and
I remember
Michael Pena.
Yeah.
And Theo
I didn't realize that he had a brother that was a filmmaker.
Yeah, he also did The Guard with Don Cheadle.
Okay, I remember
he
that.
He did one more, I can't remember. But I actually like his movies a lot. Like, I really have you seen The War on Everyone?
I feel like I did when it first came out, but I don't remember it that much.
It's so good. It's a movie where both of the cops are crooked cops.
And John Michael McDonough.
That's him. Yeah. But what's funny is that Theo James, he's the villain, and his little henchman is Caleb Landry Jones.
Mm-hmm.
And Caleb is the guy in Three Billboards who sells him billboards. But he got that gig because he was in War on Everyone.
Sure.
And Marvin Dunn was like, I like this kid, you know?
Yeah.
But War on Everyone, if you guys haven't seen it, it's like Observe and Report and Lethal Weapon had a baby.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, and I mean only the good parts of both of those movies. War on Everyone's really cool.
All right, that's going on the watch list too. Some good recommendations on this episode.
Seriously. Yeah. Well, they say great minds think alike, and I think Joe Carnahan is definitely high up on the great minds list. So
absolutely. Well, I'm gonna go ahead and do the finish puzzle here, and then we'll get into some closing thoughts. But we talked about Jackie Brown, Reservoir Dogs, Assault on Precinct 13, I guess both versions, slasher movies, Rio Bravo, Free Fire, Bulletproof, and 16 Blocks, Shane Black films, Prime Cut, and Seven Psychopaths. We also, of course, talked about a bunch of Carnahan's, Smoking Aces, and you know, so of course you gotta include Carnahan in a movie like this. But It's so much fun. I hope people seek this out once it hits VOD. I think this is a movie that could do a lot better at home, hopefully, even though I wish more people were seeing it in the theater.
I agree. Well, I mean, I will say this about it. Like, I've seen it in the theater now, not including when I saw I've seen it three times since its, like, release. You know what I mean? Once was to bring my girlfriend, or my wife. Oh, shit. My wife.
Oh, boy.
Once was to, on my own, and then once was with another buddy. But each time there was an audience of about, you know, well, time with her, there's like 10 people, you know, 10, 20, 10 to 20, that range. But the audience was so vocal during the movie, like their reactions.
My screening as well. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Like, this is a movie that, like, and I think that may be ultimately why they decided to release it in the theater. Cause, like, what are you going to lose? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, And it is an audience movie. It's a movie that makes you go, woo, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's, but it definitely, I think, will have a really good home on demand and in Redbox, especially kind of like what they did with Boss Level.
Sure. Yeah.
We got two Joe Carnahan movies in one year.
I know. And Boss Level is really good, actually. We didn't cover it on Piecing It Together. We never did an episode, but, you know, as far as because that's so popular right now, the whole loop based movie, and it feels like how are you going to do it and make it interesting again, even though they just keep doing it and doing it? But that one does it interesting because it's just so over the top.
I agree. That was another one I saw in a test screening. And David, I saw that shit in a test screening in 2018.
My God. That's a long time ago.
Yeah, they made that movie a while back. And, And I think it got delayed because of Bad Boys. Like, I think there was like he, you know, because he was working on that at the time. So I think that,
Sure.
but I didn't love it. I really liked it, you know, but it was, but I didn't love it because I felt like it needed like another $5 million for its effects, and I felt like Frank Grillo was just so wrong
He's
for the
not
lead.
the best actor,
Yeah,
and you know.
he's not Bruce Willis. Like, they obviously wanted him to be like a Bruce Willis, but he's not. He comes across as an asshole. You know what I mean? Like as like a, you know, thinks his shit don't stink kind of guy, and you can't erase that quality from him. Which is why he's so perfect as Teddy. But when I saw it again, when it finally came out, this it came out in February or March of
Yes,
this year.
it was right before the pandemic and everything, wasn't it?
No. It came out this year. It came out like March of like 2021. It came out while
God.
we were making Natasha Hall. So it was
Time
March.
is just a blur,
Yeah,
seriously.
exactly. But when I saw it again, it hadn't changed. It hadn't changed a frame as far as I could remember. And I liked it much more because, like, knowing that, like, oh, you know, without with a different actor and more effects, this would be great. I was like, yeah, once you have that in mind, this movie's fucking great, actually. And that's how he and Frank Grillo kind of partnered up. So when I heard that he and Frank Grillo partnered up after that and they were coming out with a new movie called Cop Shop, I was like, oh, no. Like, but like, talk about more than a pleasant surprise. Like, you know, and it feels nice to be surprised by somebody whose work you already love. You
Yeah,
know what I
sure.
mean? I hope I can
Absolutely.
say that when Rob Zombie's The Munsters comes
No,
out.
we will see, that's for sure.
Yeah, you're right. I will see that movie.
Yeah. Well, I think that does it for Cop Shop, and yeah, I look forward to going back and revisiting Smoke and Aces after this, actually, which I haven't seen in a long, long time, and I've been wanting to watch it because it's come up here on Piecing It Together a bunch of time as a puzzle piece.
It's a masterpiece. Like, my wife, after she saw Cop Shop, she was like, let's watch Smoking Aces, because I don't think she'd ever seen it, actually. And she was like flabbergasted. It's been a week now, and she's asked every day, like, we should watch that again, or like, can we watch that? And
Yes.
she's been like telling people at work about it, you know, like, that movie is unbelievably good.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost, I almost feel like it's the kind of movie that Tarantino wishes that he could make, meaning that, like, he has such a prestige behind his name.
Right, he has to make the next
Right.
big Tarantino movie. He can't just make something scrappy and
Right.
fun.
And last time he tried to do that was From Dusk Till Dawn, but even that, he kind of like took a step back and was like, you know, or like, even Death Proof is kind of that movie, you know what I mean? Like Smoke and Aces, though. And it's something that I wish filmmakers, this goes into the closing thoughts, by the way.
Sure,
It's something that
absolutely.
I wish that filmmakers would do more of these days, which is, so like, Joe Carnahan talked about how that movie was his response to the Iraq War. Like, this idea of, like, we were sold on this idea of why we were over there. The idea w that was not the truth, you know what I mean? And the reality was something a little more nefarious and greed-driven, right? And aimless, but it caused, like, it caused loss of numerous lives, and it caused, you know what I mean? Like, it was about his frustration with the truth being revealed about the Iraq War. And that's shown through the Ryan Reynolds character, you know, and then at the end he pulls the plugs, you know what I mean? Because he's completely defeated or whatever. And it's very evident that that's where he's coming from. You know what I mean? Like, and I wish that filmmakers today would do the same, would actually utilize the tools of filmmaking to express an idea rather than just capitalize on what's going on or tell us directly what they're thinking about a particular thing. You know what I mean? Like, we've seen so many movies in the last couple of years about police brutality against Black people. You know what I mean? And it's starting to feel exploitative at this point. You know what I mean? Like, and I wish that we would go back to an era where we use film as an allegory or film as a metaphor, and where people don't need to be spoon-fed what they're taking in, because we're so desperate as a mainstream audience, as far as I can see, we're so desperate. We have to know now. It's more important that we know than it is that we think and or experience something. You know what I mean? I use The Matrix as a great example, where it's like, back when The Matrix came out, you couldn't tell your friends at work what you thought about the movie for 3 days when it came out. You know what I mean? So you had 3 days to, like, let the high settle and also let the film sink in before you start. You know what I mean? And like, nowadays, it's like, you're telling your friends via your phone what you thought of it as you're like getting up out of the seat.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
So like, I hope that Carnahan inspires that. I hope that the pendulum swings in that direction for a little while now, where we stop using film as a way to like propagate our agendas, and we use it more to make allegories about our belief systems with hitmen and you know, and
yeah,
and magicians and Vegas and, you know, all that.
With a fun movie.
That's exactly.
Yes, exactly. Absolutely.
Bring back movies. Fuck film.
Yes, there you go. That's a good closing thought. Yeah, I like it. Well, Joe, I've been bracing myself for what I think is going to be your recommendation of another movie you watched recently that you'd like to recommend to our listeners.
What movie do you think that is that I'm going to say? Do you think it's going to be Dear Evan Hansen?
I think that's what it's going to be. Is that what it's going to be?
Is that what you really think it's going to be? Well, no. But okay. Yes, I do recommend that everybody go see Dear Evan Hansen because it's a movie about empathy, and the fact that people are calling him a sociopath speaks a lot about our current audience mindset. I was gonna recommend 1941.
Okay.
Which is a Steven Spielberg movie. I can't remember if I recommended it on the last one.
I think you did. Yes, that's you great.
I'm still gonna recommend it because
recommend it all over again.
I still haven't stopped thinking about that movie. I got the Blu-ray and I sat through a torturous 2-hour Laserdisc edition making of documentary. It was like on the Laserdisc, and the quality is Laserdisc quality on the Blu-ray of this making of this movie. And it's just such a movie of pure craft. It's such a, and again, I hate to boost up Spielberg, but I really got to recommend it again. Like I haven't experienced that from a movie since we last talked on here. You know what I mean? And I've seen so many movies since then, you know, like motherfucker. Like, but yes, Dear Evan Hansen, good call. That's a very good film.
Okay.
You have to love musicals.
Yeah, Dear Evan Hansen, I'm probably not going to get to, but 1941, I literally just added to my watch list on Letterboxd, so I'm
very curious.
I'm going to do it.
I'm very curious to see what all the movies you've said that I've talked about with you that you said I'm adding to my watch list. I'm very curious to see what that list in particular.
That list has a lot of stuff on it, a lot of weird stuff. I did watch Fool's Gold. That was one of your random recommendations.
If I had to pick one out of all of them. Yeah. Somebody on your group page the other day talked about How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, and it was an opportunity for me to be like, have you ever heard of a Fool's Gold?
Whenever you get the chance, you got to do it. Yeah. Well, Joe, why don't you tell people what you got going on with your film and everything you're doing?
Oh, yes. Natasha Hall, the movie we completed. We did our premiere for it in August, and it went very well. We actually just got into our first film festival.
Awesome.
It's the only time I got into Chad's film festival, Polygrind. My producer at the time, Joe O'Neill, submitted it just to that because I think he just wanted to go to Vegas. And he wanted an excuse, and we got in, so that was really nice. But this is the first time that I've ever like tried to put one of my movies into a film festival, and we got into the Treasure Coast International Film Festival. I have no idea the level of legitimacy of this festival. I mean, it's been around for 15 years, and the guy who like runs Power Rangers is going to be there, so that's kind of cool, I guess.
That's nice.
But we found out that we are not only selected, but we are the closing night film.
Nice.
Which is cool. And we are also nominated for Best Picture, Director, Screenplay, Cinematography. My wife is nominated for Best Actor. And we're nominated for Best Editing, which is, awesome. You know, that's kind of funny because it's I edit my movies, but I use a fake name because I don't like to see my name up in the credits a million times. So sure. I use the name Philip Mediter or Phil Mediter.
Nice.
And it was like very funny to see their nominations, and they're like on their websites, like, you know, Best Editing, Philip Mediter. And I was
nice.
Like,
nice. That's a name right there.
Yeah, we're very happy. Well, my costume designer name is Corey McManus. My production designer name is Gustavo Devora. Cinematographer, when I do that, is Franklin Ghost McKenzie. And my producer name is now Brian George and Jacqueline Rose. It's a twofer.
Okay. Very nice.
They're a brother-sister duo.
Gotcha.
But, I'm hoping to screen it in Vegas sometime soon. I'm also going to screen it in Jacksonville while I'm out. I'm going to go to Treasure Coast to that film festival on the weekend before I'm going to screen it in Jacksonville, Florida. So we're looking to screen it in Vegas and Denver Colorado before the year end as well.
That's awesome. I'm really happy to hear about the festival, and I look forward to hearing more about the film and finally getting to see it sometime soon.
Yeah. We're going to make that happen sooner than later, I'm sure, you know?
Yeah. Well, Joe, thank you as always for joining me here on Piecing It Together. And I know we have a couple lined up for later in the year, but I look forward to next time.
Yeah, same.
Hi, I'm Kay.
And I'm Jay. And we give you the Fuck My Work Life podcast.
The weekly podcast where we read your workplace stories to you. Hilarious mishaps.
I lost my balance and grabbed the only thing I could to steady myself. I grabbed a teetering stack of about 8 sheets of drywall. I hit all of my knees and elbows on the way down.
All of them. Workplace shenanigans.
Carl and Ted had super glued all Bob's pencils and pens to his desk.
Full disclosure, I smoked a lot of weed at that time.
Awkward encounters.
As he's wandering around the party girl section
exactly.
of a clothing store.
Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at FMWLPOD. That's FMWL Pod.
Email your stories to FMWLPOD@gmail.com. That's FMWLPOD@gmail.com.
All right, so I hope you enjoyed that conversation about Cop Shop. Thank you, as always, to Joe Black for joining me on that episode. And thank you, as always, to all of you for listening to this podcast. Like I said at the top of the show, we've been getting so many new listeners lately. Those downloads just going up and up and up. And I wish I knew how or why. I wish there was a really good way of tracking that stuff. But they really don't make it easy, let me tell you. But I just am happy to see those numbers going up because I want people to listen to the show. And I want to keep making the show. And I want to keep making it better. So please, if you like what we're doing here on Piecing It Together, get in touch and let me know what you like about it, what you don't like about it. You can rate and review us over on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser or Good Pods. Give us a 5-star review. That's nice. But also leave a nice little review. Let us know what you actually think. Or just get in touch with me, of course. You can email me directly, bydavidrosen@gmail.com. You know, also, if you want to join me for an upcoming episode of Piecing It Together, get in touch with me. But you could also DM me, you know, on Twitter, @PiecingPod, or join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, and get in touch with me that way. But always looking for new guests here on the show, and also always looking for feedback on the show itself. So yeah, make sure you're subscribed, share the show with your friends, check out that Produced by David Rosen Patreon, all that stuff, the usuals, you know. I also want to mention quickly, because this episode will be coming out just after the blog post about my new album. You guys all know, hopefully by now, that I am a music composer. Technically a music composer first, podcaster second, even though it doesn't seem that way nowadays. But my website for my music is bydavidrosen.com. Like as in music by David Rosen. You should check out bydavidrosen.com, not only because there's lots of great stuff there from all my albums and links to some of the films I've scored and my reel and all kinds of other stuff, but I also just posted a new blog post with all the info about my new album, The Dissection Table. This is a soundtrack to a film that I scored way back in 2015. The film itself never got finished, and it's just been sitting on the back burner. I've been waiting for people to hear this score, and I finally got the go-ahead to just go release it as a soundtrack. And I'm so excited to share this music with you guys because it is some of my favorite music I've worked on for a film. I am just so proud of this score. And even though the film, we don't know when it will finally get finished, hopefully at some point. We got like a kind of tentative end of 2022, but you know, who knows? But until you get to see the film, at least you'll finally get to hear the music. So the album will be out October 15th. You can read all about it on my website, bydavidrosen.com. It's available now for pre-order on iTunes, if you're somebody who still buys music, or over on Bandcamp as well. Note to self, set up the Bandcamp. I record this in advance, of course, and I haven't actually set up the Bandcamp for this album yet. I guess I'm going to do that after I finish recording this. Anyway, yeah, Bandcamp, iTunes, it is available for pre-order now, and the album comes out October 15th. I'm going to close this out with a piece of music, but I'm not going to play a piece of music from that album, only because I've been playing pieces of music from that album in the last few episodes, and so I'm going to switch it up a little bit and play something that would feel right at home in a film like Cop Shop. It actually has been in a couple of all-out shootout cop action movies before. This is a track called Cut Open from my second album, An Unseen Sky. Definitely would fit right in a Joe Carnahan film, so I figured it's a good one to close this out with. So enjoy it. Check out the albums. Check out my website. Make sure you're subscribed. All the stuff I always ask you to do. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back with more Piecing It Together coming up real soon.
West Production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.